The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested. Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. Every week, Josh will teach you ways to help manage risk and protect your retirement income in the new economy. The primary focus at Aptus Wealth is to provide flexible planning strategies that can efficiently achieve your long-term retirement goals.
Besides every Saturday, you can also join Josh Mondays at 12:30 p.m. for Money Mondays with Bruce Hurley right here on 98.9 The Answer. You can always find the recording at aptuswealth.com as well. And to schedule an appointment to go through the Aptus Blueprint process, Josh's phone number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Let's start off the show. Josh, you are recovering from a big fall you had last weekend.
Well, I don't want to give it more credit than it's due. Yeah, it was a big fall. I'm lying. It hurt a lot. We've gotten a tremendous amount of, well, not a tremendous amount of snow for parts of the country, but for central Ohio, this past week has been a lot of snow. And I made that, you know, really foolish error of thinking that, hey, it's just snow. There's no ice under it. And did a really YouTube-worthy version of a wipeout. I wish I would have had it recorded, but nope, just my four-year-old son to give me the old thumbs up as my feet were higher than my head and I landed on my hip.
And he was outside with you?
I really recognized my age when that happened, you know, because it was, I didn't bounce right back. Let's put it that way. It hurt.
Yeah, it hurts for a long time too, doesn't it, at this age?
It does, yeah, but I'll be okay. Nothing's broken, just maybe a shattered ego and a couple of bruises.
Good to hear. And I love that your son was giving you a thumbs up through the window. That's...
Yeah. I really appreciate that. Can't you a four-year-old for it, right?
Exactly. All right. We're going to talk retirement. Let's start with annuities. When people hear the word annuity, they often have an immediate reaction one way or another. What should people take into consideration when evaluating how an annuity can be part of their retirement plan?
I think you're absolutely right that annuities get very positive and negative feedback. People seem to have a very knee-jerk reaction of annuities for one reason or the other. You know, they knew somebody that had one that had a great experience or a horrible experience. And oftentimes, you know, when you hear the word annuity, although there's so many different types of annuities, we tend to lump them all together. But it would be as akin to saying that my friend owned an XYZ brand of a car and it was a lemon car, so I hate cars. That's really what people are doing when they say, I hate annuities. Now, there are some things that are inherent with annuities that, you know, I think you need to pay attention to. And you need to certainly do your research and make sure that it fits your situation. But there are four different types of annuities. Number one, and that is there's immediate annuities, which for all intents and purposes work much like a pension. You are making an exchange with an insurance company for a lifetime or certain time period worth of income. Most times that you can't outlive. So there's a huge value to people from the perspective of guarantees and knowing that they're not going to outlive their income. Ironically, though, that's a very small percentage of annuity sales in the United States. The bulk of them fall into the other three categories, which are variable annuities, fixed annuities, and fixed indexed annuities. And again, people lump these all together, but they're dramatically different. And they all work differently, and they have different fee structures, different attributes, different benefits. So I think, you know, the takeaway here is you should do some investigation and find out that even, you know, what category would make sense for me, which ones do I like, which ones don't I like? And then on top of that, what companies would provide an annuity contract that I would like? Let me give you an example. Let's say you look at a variable annuity. Variable annuities have, all of them, have a fee called a mortality and expense charge, all of them. And that mortality and expense charge is really what you're paying for is tax deferral if it's non-qualified money and usually some form of death benefit. So if tax deferral isn't of value to you and a death benefit isn't of value to you, i.e. I don't care about death benefit and I'm putting this money in an IRA, well, then why would you want to pay the extra 1.5% on that? But here's the variance that I was getting at. If you go to a company like Vanguard has a variable annuity through Transamerica, if you go to a company like that, your mortality and expense charge might be somewhere in the realm of, you know, 0.25%. If you go to some other companies, that mortality expense charge can range all the way up to about 1.5%. So if you go to the 1.5%, you might then conclude that all variable annuities are too expensive. But maybe that tax deferral and death benefit provision is of value to you and you can get it for, you know, 0.5% or 0.25%. Well, now we might be talking about something. So I think my point here is don't automatically shoot from the hip and say they're all bad. They might have a lot of value to your particular situation, and a lot of variable or a lot of annuities that are fixed provide us huge guarantees that we might really be looking for as we come off of a, you know, a negative almost 6% week in the market in the past, you know, well, let's say negative 7% month in the past 30 days.
So if I was at a dinner party or a cocktail party and someone said, oh, I hate annuities, what's like one huge benefit I could say to make people kind of change their mind? Like one example.
Well, typically the easiest way to solve that problem when it comes to most financial products is say, why? Why do you hate annuities? And what you'll find typically is they don't really know. They just know that they hate them. And they might say they're expensive. And you would say, well, why do you believe they're expensive? And oftentimes people don't know. They just know that that's what they've read or they've heard, but they don't actually have any factual data to back up on it. So what I always say is if I could provide you with a solution that would offer you better rates than what the bond market is offering right now, multiple higher rates than what the CD market is offering right now, with the same level of guarantee and tax deferral, would you be interested? And most people would say, well, of course. I mean, the bank isn't paying anything, and bonds, you know, as interest rates go up, bonds go down. There's a lot of risk there. And even beyond that, bonds aren't paying that much. So I'm looking for anything fixed that provides me some sort of guaranteed interest. Okay, well, that's actually called a fixed or fixed indexed annuity. Are you interested now? So the point that I'm taking away here, if someone talks to you at a dinner party, ask them questions, and they'll usually, you'll find out they don't know what they're talking about from the jump. But once you start looking at it without attaching the negative connotation of annuity, it might be of value to you. Does it mean that everybody needs an annuity? Of course not. But for a lot of people, it provides a tremendous amount of value.
And this is something you go over with your clients when people call you and you go through the Aptus Blueprint process.
Of course. It's most important to us that all of our clients understand their options. I think really poor financial planning would simply be me telling you this is what you should do. And the reason I think that's terrible is if the market goes up or the market goes down, you don't necessarily know why your money is reacting in a certain way because you just did what I told you. And it's important that you understand your plan and you're 100% bought into your plan and you understand how your money is going to react in different market environments. And we've learned that, if nothing else, over the last 30 days. The market's been more volatile than we've certainly been used to. Shy of the COVID blip, we've really had a heck of a run over the last, you know, decade plus. So what we found over the last 30 days is that, wow, volatility really happens. And I get very worried when my money fluctuates by, you know, if you have a $1 million portfolio, you've seen it fluctuate by upwards of, you know, $100,000 potentially. Why? So we need to explain to people, these are the different investment options that you have. Here's the pros and cons of all of them. Here's how they would fit into your scenario. And now let's decide what makes the most sense for you.
Josh's number is 614-364-7300. That is 614-364-7300 to schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. And Josh, an annuity might be a new investment for lots of people, but many already have a few different pieces in place. And as we look to the rest of the year, which common accounts should we aim to max out contributions for in 2022?
Yeah, there's a few that I think everybody should at least take a look at. And the big ones would be obviously looking at your company-sponsored plan, your 401k. So if you looked back at last year and you said, you know what, I paid too much in taxes, or I'm not even sure what my company match is. I don't even know if I have a company match to my 401k. Now's the time to take a peek at that, because that's not one of the accounts that you can look at retroactively and change. Meaning once December 31st hits, it's kind of water under the bridge for the most part. So look at your 401k. Say, does it offer a company match? And let's make sure we're at minimum taking advantage of that company match. And if we can, to the maximum, let's find out what the most efficient amount of money that we can put in there is in the way of taxes and achieving our goals. Secondly, you know, health savings accounts aren't necessarily new, but what has changed with them, and for those of you who don't know, health savings account is an account that you can put money into on a pre-tax basis out of your account, which means you're not paying taxes on the money you're depositing. It grows tax deferred. You can actually invest that money if you want, much like a 401k. And as long as you pull the money out for the purposes of health insurance costs, that money is tax-free. So it's literally like a additional Roth IRA that you can contribute, but with the added bonus that the money you put in is pre-tax. Now, it was in the past that HSAs were not necessarily available to everybody, and it wasn't available to everybody because you have to have what's called a high deductible health insurance plan to contribute to it. But good or bad, definitely bad, most healthcare plans at this point are pretty much high deductible plans because everybody's deductibles are pretty high. So for the most part, almost everybody can contribute to an HSA plan. There are maximums that you can put in, and you can only do it, you know, once per year up to that maximum. So take a look. That could be a great way not only to save for your healthcare costs on a pre-tax basis, but also bolster your retirement savings down the line. And we can get into that maybe in a different segment about how you can actually utilize your HSA in the future almost as an additional 401k. And then lastly, everybody should take a look at Roth IRA contributions. If your 401k does not have a Roth option, and if you meet the income requirements and or the ability to do a backdoor Roth IRA, and I don't want to dive too deep into those right now, but the moral of the story is, if you have the funds available, you should be looking at doing a Roth IRA every single year that you can, up to some dollar amount, hopefully as close to the maximum as you can get. Now, the Roth IRA is one of those great investments that you can have a little hindsight on, meaning you can actually contribute to a Roth IRA for 2021 all the way up until April 15th of 2022. So you can take a look at your situation, save up the money, you know, at the beginning of the year that maybe you didn't have on December 31st, and go back retroactively and make a contribution to a Roth IRA. And remember, Roth IRAs grow tax deferred, but every nickel you pull out of them is tax-free. And when you take into account compound interest and all the wonders that go along with that, we could be talking about many multiples more than you put in the way of gains tax-free when retirement rolls around the corner.
And one question with the HSA, are there some that are use it or lose it?
That's the huge differentiation between, if you recall, the old flexible spending accounts. Flexible spending account means that you can use this only for healthcare. And if you don't use it, you lose it. HSAs are completely different. They always roll and roll and roll forward. So, you know, I have clients that have, you know, over $100,000 in their HSA from making contributions over many, many years and not using it. Their intention is to use that money in retirement to, you know, help pay for, you know, the rising costs of healthcare costs when they're retired, or in the event of an emergency, they can tap into it for other purposes.
Josh's number is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. That's to schedule an appointment to go through the Aptus Blueprint process with Josh, or if you have any questions about what we're talking about. More with Josh Pick when we come back.
If you're concerned about the market and you want to learn new strategies to manage retirement risks, call our office to learn more about the Aptus Retirement Blueprint today at 614-364-7300. There's no cost or obligation, but space fills fast. Give us a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Peck. To schedule your own planning session, to learn new strategies to manage risk, give Josh a call. His number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, let's start this segment with you asking me a question. I know you want it.
Oh, all right. I'll ask a question. So let me give you some background first. So Diane actually does this show remotely because she's smart and moved to a warm climate as I'm staring out the window looking at snow on the ground. So you live in Arizona, right around Scottsdale, correct?
Yes.
So this question, hopefully you can frame this answer in a way that it would be applicable to everybody listening throughout Central Ohio or anywhere else where they might be picking up online, as I have clients everywhere. The housing market. It's a question I get all the time, and you are in the real estate business as well as being on the radio, you being a realtor, and also being in the investment real estate world. I think there's a lot of mixed information that we hear out there. What's going to happen with the housing market? Is it going to crash? Or, you know, when rates change, or how much runway do we have left before this whole thing turns around? I have a lot of clients that'll tell me, you know, I'm waiting for things to settle down before I buy. Give us an analysis. What do you think is going to happen in the real estate market?
Well, I don't think prices are going to go down here in the Arizona area. And there's a lot of people from Ohio that actually have second homes here. So I have actually a lot of clients from Ohio. And everyone's worried about the same thing. They think that prices are going up so quickly that we're going to have a correction. And according to our market stats here, there is still plenty of demand. We do not have enough supply that's pushing prices up. And there's no sign of it ending. I mean, we went through something catastrophic, which you know, let's say a pandemic, and prices ended up increasing and demand continued. So barring any other sort of kind of disastrous thing like that, you never know what happens. But all indicators are that prices are not going down anytime soon in this area. They will level off and then we'll get to a normal rate of appreciation. But we have so much demand here that there's no correction in sight in this part of the country.
So I think the same is true here, but I think there's two things that always get brought up, and that is we have a supply and demand issue. Just like you said, there's not enough supply and there's plenty of demand. And, you know, we can only have so many housing starts, you know, per month. But once we get to a certain threshold, that should start to levelize. But the question is, you know, how long do we have before we get to a reasonable supply and demand exchange, meaning
normal?
How long do you think it'll be before, I mean, listen, if we're short, you know, a million houses, it's not like we can just go, okay, we're going to start a million houses, but at some point we'll get on pace to be able to do that. How long do you think that'll take?
I mean, for the first two quarters of this year, prices will continue to rise in the Arizona market. So after that, I'm thinking that they will level off, because it's like, if we don't have enough supply, you know, there's no sales and transactions that are going to be happening. And one thing people are saying, you know, as they're mentioning too, is interest rates are increasing. Well, we've seen, and historically in the stats show, that people don't stop buying. They just buy a different size home. It doesn't stop them from buying altogether.
So that's a perfect segue. Does that mean, do you believe that certain market segments, if we do have, it's a big if, we do have a correction, it will be more specific to certain? And by market segments, I don't mean parts of the country, but do you think it will be, you know, the higher value houses will get hit harder because people won't be able to afford them? Meaning that, you know, people who are buying a $500,000 house will only be able to afford a $400,000 house because of interest rates. And then in turn, will that drag that section of the market down? Or do you think that it's just going to be a natural kind of swap?
I don't think there's going to be a correction. There's going to be a leveling off. So there's not even correction in my vocabulary when it comes to real estate.
Okay. I tend to agree with you, actually. I think that there's obviously going to be some segments. We could have a completely different conversation potentially about commercial real estate, as most people are starting to work from home now. But when it comes to the housing market, if you had the opportunity, you know, 10 years ago to buy a house, now you're kicking yourself. If you had the opportunity 20 years ago to buy a house, now you're kicking yourself. So I think all the naysayers of today saying, you're an idiot if you buy a house today, 10 years from now, they'll probably be kicking themselves.
Yeah.
I don't think that we're going to see 30% price appreciations every 2 years. I think we'll levelize off, but I think we got a lot of runway where there's just the supply and demand chain is a big problem.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, we were talking before the show that Intel is now investing $20 billion. I feel kind of embarrassed. You're the one that told me this, but is putting in a plant up in Lincoln County for $20 billion. That's just going to drive more demand, more people, more housing in the Ohio area. So, I mean, I just don't see it changing. The population's growing and we're not keeping up.
And just to reassure everyone, back in the last housing crash, those were a completely different set of circumstances. You know, there were 100% loans. People didn't know kind of what the loans were getting into. That was kind of a predatory lending situation. Here, if something catastrophic were to happen, people have enough equity in their homes to just be able to sell it. And we have such a demand that it's just going to be absorbed by the market.
So well, I agree with you. And I remember back in 2008, 2009, I would have people come into my office and say, you know, why would anybody want to invest in you know, stocks or annuities or whatever financial instrument we were talking about at the time? They said, you know, I own 8 homes. And I'm looking at them going, you make $60,000 a year. How in the world do you own 8 homes? Well, it's great. You just go to the bank and you just say, it's an ONOC loan. I don't have to put any money down. And they don't even ask me how much money I make. And as long as the renters don't move out, I'm great. Well, then renters moved out and we had the correction and it was such a house of cards and we're not there today. So I agree with you 100%. It's just not going to be the same scenario.
Yeah. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. So we agree the housing market doesn't pull back this year. Josh, what are some other sectors of the economy that might experience corrections or at least contractions from growth in recent years?
Well, I think the easiest place to take a look would be what has surged for the last decade at unprecedented levels, and is that growth, you know, able to continue? So let's look at what's done the most. U.S. growth stocks. I mean, U.S. growth stocks have had unprecedented levels of growth over the last 5 years. But even more than that, if you look at a handful of U.S. growth stocks, we call them the FANG stocks, so Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, I don't know, I'm kind of repeating some of it here, but the point is all the names that you're very familiar with, the technology growth sector, growth has been exacerbated. As a matter of fact, just in general, if you look at 2020, for example, we started off the year in 2020 up about 1% in the U.S. S&P 500. By the end of COVID, we were down, you know, over a third. Then we rebounded and we ended up finishing up the year in the high teens. If you look at that high teens, about 80% of the growth of the S&P 500 was amongst those 6 or 7 stocks. So when we talk about growth, I mean, it's been quite earth-shattering. And then you look back to another time and you say, when did that happen before? Well, in the late 90s into the year 2000, we had the very similar thing happen. As a matter of fact, Microsoft, which was one of the really barn-bustered companies over the last couple of years, was one of the companies leading the charge back in 1999 and 2000. And when the dot-com bubble burst, it took Microsoft, I believe I might be a little wrong in here, but I believe about 15 years to get back to even. Now, am I suggesting that Microsoft isn't a great company? Of course not. It's a fantastic company. It just set a couple of records the last couple of years. But what I am saying is if you look at the stock market today, and we're seeing it already, you know, we're seeing huge drops in companies like Netflix ahead of, you know, Wednesday's earnings and all sorts of stuff. We're seeing it start to retract quicker than the overall stock market. What I'm suggesting is this. If your time frame is 20, 25 years from now, then it doesn't matter if you were invested in Microsoft back in 1999 because you've been rewarded handsomely for holding it for the last 20 plus years. However, if you're 60, 65 years old and retiring, that would mean that you didn't get back to even until you were, let's say, 85 years old. Well, when we're talking about 80, 85 years old and you're withdrawing money, that can be catastrophic failure for a financial plan. So my point is this. I think as we... And there's obviously, you know, mixed reviews on what happens when interest rates change and all the things that are affecting our economy. But if you look at your financial plan moving forward, don't let the amazing gains that you've received over the last 5 to 10 years be eroded by simply staying the course with things that have done really, really well for the last 5 or 10 years and ignoring the fact that we may want to make some rebalance adjustments to things like value, to things like managed equity and risk mitigation strategies as we enter into a potentially very volatile time. So I would stay away from, in general, large cap, well, not even say large cap, let's say the big name tech growth. Doesn't mean I would not have any allocation there, but I would tread lightly.
And so let's say people's investment portfolios are 100% in stocks. What is there an average that they should now pull out and put into the different vehicles?
Well, obviously, everybody's situation is different based upon time frame, income needs, et cetera. But, and I'm not even necessarily saying that we pull out of stocks and start putting money in bonds, because that's a whole nother conversation with bonds really being poised for a difficult decade ahead with interest rates being where they are. But what I am suggesting is we start to reevaluate things like the U.S. economy has absolutely dominated on the world stage for the last 10 years. Does that mean that we just put 100% of our money in the U.S. economy? No. I think we should make sure that we're taking a global approach. Two, I think if you've been very heavily dominated with growth stocks and trying to pick the next Tesla, the next Amazon, et cetera, maybe we should make sure that we have an adequate allocation amongst value stocks. Think of the boring ones, the McDonald's of the world, right? I'm not advocating everybody go buy McDonald's, but think of those types of brands and those types of names that pay a hefty dividend, that can weather storms, and that people aren't going to quit utilizing regardless of what happens in the economy. If there's one thing we learned from COVID, you can do a lot of things to us, and we're not going to give up toilet paper. We're not going to give up, quite a few things. Alcohol sales, for example, were incredibly high. So, I would just say moving forward over the next few years as we enter into a rising interest rate, inflationary environment, you got to start paying a little bit more attention to the fundamentals of investing and to things like balance sheets that you've been able to get away with for the last 10 years or so.
To schedule an appointment with Josh to go through the Aptus Blueprint process, Josh's number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And you can join Josh as he talks retirement with Bruce Hooley every Monday at 1230 p.m. right here on 98.9 The Answer. You can always find that recording at aptuswealth.com. More with Josh Pick when we come back.
If you're concerned about the market and you want to learn new strategies to manage retirement risks, call our office to learn more about the Aptus Retirement Blueprint today at 614-364-7300. There's no cost or obligation, but space fills fast. Give us a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint radio show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, give Josh a call. His phone number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, having a plan is an integral part of a stable retirement, but what are the most important parts of a carefully crafted plan?
Oh, there's so many of them. Let's cover kind of the beginning. Number one, you have to clearly identify what your goals are. I think oftentimes I hear people say, well, I want to be comfortable. Well, comfortable means a lot of different things to different people. So we really have to formulate what amount of money per month is it going to take to make the wheels go round on whatever goals it is that you want to achieve. And those could be so widely varying that we really have to spend a significant amount of time to hammer that down to figure out what it is. And then beyond that, though, we have to make that goal reasonably flexible, which sounds counter to what I just said. But things change, lifestyle changes, and emergencies happen. So we want to make sure that we have an emergency fund, disaster fund, and also I just got a wild hair up, my wazoo fund, and I want to do something. So we want to make sure that we make that goal very clear, but have some flexibility. Then we have to take inventory. So we have to do, net worth statements and find out what do you have and what are you continuing to do? meaning if you're not retired yet, at what rate are you saving? What does your company plan afford you? What options do you have? Just take an all-encompassing inventory of where you're at. And then obviously off of the goal, we can start to, you know, eliminate things like, well, you're going to have your house paid off, and these things seem pretty obvious. But all of these go into coming up with, this is what we need to accomplish. Now, what is the best way for us to accomplish it? And then we need to start looking at things like, all right, what's our tax situation going to be at the income that you need based upon the resources that we have? Meaning Roth IRAs are taxed differently than your 401k, assuming your 401k isn't in a Roth option, are taxed differently than maybe you have some rental properties, are taxed differently than your checking account. All these things are taxed differently. And what way can we withdraw from all these different funds most efficiently to minimize our tax burden? And then once we figure that out, that really steers us towards some investment objectives. But before we can get there, we have to figure out, what is your particular appetite for risk? And I hate using the word risk because it seems so broad brushstroke. I've never met any client that's ever come in and I said, well, how much risk are you willing to take? Roll the dice, bet it all. Nobody ever says that. What they're really saying by risk is, how much volatility can you handle? How much bounce in your money can you handle? In other words, if this year you lost a third of your money, knowing that 10 years from now you will have doubled your money, is that a reasonable exchange for you? And most people say, oh, of course, I'm a long-term investor.
Yeah, as long as at the end we're up, that's all I care about.
Except when they're down 30 or 40%. and then everybody goes, well, it doesn't matter at this point. I had $1 million and now I only have 700,000 or 600,000. So you really have to, and this is kind of where the science and math kind of come together. You know, it's quantitative and qualitative. Is me getting to understand you and reading between the lines a little bit. What can you really tolerate? And that's up to me to ask the right questions. But then once we come up with that, we can establish kind of a risk mitigation strategy, keeping those bookends in the right place, meaning we don't want to take you past this point or your head will explode to achieve the goals that we want to get to. And then, you know, from there, we dive into all the rest of the stuff, you know, the stuff that's not that exciting to talk about, but is a requirement of almost all financial plans, particularly if you have a family. And that is, you know, do you have enough insurance? If this plan doesn't make it all the way to the end, and your wings get clipped early, which unfortunately, you know, I've seen happen with my father passing away young. Do we have the right insurances in place to make sure that our families are provided for? What if we go into a long-term care facility, which unfortunately about half of us will? And, you know, you start kind of tying it up. And this is why, by the way, Diane, anybody who goes to a financial planner meets with them once and then they go, I got it covered. There's no possible way that somebody understands you and develops the perfect financial plan for you in one meeting. Now, they might be a great money manager. They might be able to get you great investment returns. But financial planning done correctly takes a process. And that process has to be one that also includes things like its repeatability and your accountability and measuring it. Meaning that I'll have clients come in and go, you know what, I'm going to do this trading and I've done well in this and I've done well in that. That's great. But when the numbers get big, is that repeatable? And will you be held accountable to it? Because investing takes time and it has to be repeatable and you need somebody that holds you accountable. I'm going to make sure that you're saving what we said you were going to save. And I'm going to make sure that you hold fast when it's time to hold fast, even though everything you read in the newspapers and online is saying it's the next Armageddon. Because if there's one thing that the media is very good at, it's making us feel like everything's great or everything's awful. Very rarely do you go on the news and they go, good news, everything's great today. Check back with you tomorrow. So we have to kind of see through that and help you through the fog sometimes.
And you have the Aptus Blueprint process for new listeners to the show. When someone calls your office, you take them through a multi-step program called the Aptus Blueprint process. Let's talk about that.
Exactly. And that process really, you know, is all-encompassing of what we just talked about. So in meeting number one, we're going to do that goal identification and take inventory and find out everything about you. Want to know what your goals are? Read between the lines a little bit about where your risk tolerance really is, what your hopes and dreams are, but also what your fears are. And then we're going to analyze that data in meeting number two and say, if you keep doing what you're doing, is your arrow going to hit the target? And hopefully the answer to that is yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be improved upon. So in meeting number three, even if your arrow is going to hit the target, we're going to give you something that you can take away that you can improve your situation with. Maybe uncover a stone that you hadn't thought of. And if you're way off target, we're going to get you back on target as best we can. And then not until meeting number four will we decide, is this a mutually beneficial relationship and which should we work together? You know, one thing about retirement planning is most of us, hopefully, are going to be retired for a long period of time. So we want to make sure that we get it right the first time. And the only way we can do that is by, you know, taking one bite at a time and making sure that this is a good fit.
This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300 to schedule your Aptus Blueprint process. So, Josh, talking about parts to a plan, we've talked about everything from stocks to gold and many of the millions of cryptocurrencies out there over the years. But I have to ask about NFTs. What are they, and do they fit into a retirement plan?
So it's so interesting, actually. If you look at, you know, from, you know, my evolution in the market over the last 20 plus years, you know, when I graduated college, you know, email was in its infancy, and now, you know, we just got done talking about there's an Intel plant being put in, you know, Central Ohio. An Intel plant wasn't even a thing in existence 40 years ago, right? And then just over the last several years, there's no question that cryptocurrency has really become a huge, huge piece of, you know, the investment market. And now we shift over to NFTs. So if one thing is constant, it's the evolution of where we can invest our money. But NFTs essentially stands for non-fungible tokens. Now, full disclosure, I don't by any means pretend to be an expert in this realm, but essentially, in layman's terms, what it is your ability to buy essentially online information. That's the easiest way to explain it. I'm sure anybody who's an NFT expert would go, he doesn't know what the heck he's talking about. But for those of us who are definitely laymen's in this world.
Yeah, we need it broken down in the simplest way possible.
Down. So what would that mean? Well, it would mean, let's say that there's a famous picture out there that's only a digital picture that we see all the time. We have the ability to purchase that. And then we have the ability to monetize that. So anytime somebody uses that picture, we get credit for it, right? And then we can buy and sell that. This is very similar. The easiest way to break it down, and this is a digital form, but it's very similar to now you have the ability, believe it or not, to buy shares in just about anything. Meaning you can go look up online the most vintage wine ever and say, I'd like to own $50 worth of a $1,000 bottle of wine or a $50,000 bottle of wine. And you can actually buy fractional ownerships via a trust in that particular bottle of wine or vintage cars or anything. It's literally fractional ownership in all these things. Well, similarly, this would be somewhat of an ownership in a digital item.
And digital is make-believe, or digital is just something you see on the computer? Digital?
Well, now we're getting into the matrix, right?
Yeah.
Because digital is reality at this point. And that's so interesting to me as I watch, you know, my kids and how they interact with other people, and the world is really shifting. And we could definitely go down a path of whether or not I think this is a good or bad idea in the way that we interact with one another. But the fact of the matter is, it's happening. You know, my children communicate with friends online absolutely as much as they do in person, which seems so foreign to you and I and probably most people listening to the show. But that's where it's moving. So the intersect between the virtual world and the real world is certainly becoming more and more blurred. And this is just an extension of that. Now, to answer your question as to whether or not somebody should get into this type of investing, well, one, I think you have to have a passion for it and you have to go gain your own understanding and realize that anytime there's something new, there are risks associated with that newness. The same thing was true of Bitcoin, and you could argue is still true of cryptocurrency, but that's certainly got some more legs under it than the NFT world does. The way that I view it is there are certain things that are time-tested and true. Buying real estate over the long run, if done correctly, typically plays out very, very well if you have a knowledge base to do so, and there's financial incentives for you to do that. Buying good companies, i.e. via buying their stock, over the long run, plays out very, very well. These are new. These have more risk associated with them. So my suggestion is always pick a percentage that you feel comfortable with in having this, let's call them flyers, let's call them satellites of increased exposure to risk, whether that's Bitcoin or NFTs or whatever it is that you're passionate about and you want to do a little bit more investigation, whether that's 5 or 10%, and just stick true to that number. So I would be very cautious to anybody who says NFTs is the next thing of the future. I'm going to put all my money in it. I think you're tap dancing on the minefield. But beyond that, it might be worth putting some money in.
But what are the proponents of NFTs? Why are they saying it's necessary? Like, what is the why were they created? Is there some thing in the market that's missing that it provides some security for something, or why were they even created?
Yeah, so NFTs in general is a very broad brushstroke, believe it or not. It's kind of like saying cryptocurrency and blockchain, right? Blockchain has a lot of, like Ethereum is a cryptocurrency, but it's also a blockchain technology that's utilized in financial transactions. Well, similarly, if we look at NFTs, and Mike, you might be able to, our producer Mike is in the sports world. He can chime into this too. But if you go to a sporting event now, you don't get a ticket. You get an email of your tickets. Well, how do we make sure that that ticket can't be counterfeited? I mean, otherwise I could just like take a picture of your ticket and then I guess I have a ticket too. And then we all have tickets. So there has to be a technology that can track that uniqueness to that particular sporting event ticket. Well, similarly, we can create a uniqueness to a particular item or picture or meme or whatever it might be via NFT. So it enables us the transactional trust, if you will, or transactional verification that this is in fact legitimate. So there's more than to NFTs than just buying this random thing online. It also has to do with kind of a transactional thing.
But oh, so it's like again, a security. It's a security because there are scammers out there who copy things. So it's kind of was created for security.
That's one element of it for sure. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could invest in the NFT market. You can invest in the technology that's required for the NFT market. You can invest in actual NFTs. You can do a lot of different things. But again, rather new market. I don't think that the technology is going anywhere because I don't think we're going to go back to paper tickets going to sporting events anytime soon. But again, I don't claim to be an expert in this world.
But I think the good thing out of all of this is that it has introduced people who otherwise knew nothing about investing, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and these NFTs have actually sparked an interest and actually educated them about investing their money.
Yeah, I think there's a pro and a con. The pros to having readily available information like we do today is that we do have the ability to educate ourselves and really expand our horizons in the way of what's available to us in education in all topics and also investing. The downside is that education isn't necessarily monitored. So anybody can really go on and say, well, here's a help video on how to invest in NFTs. And you go, well, you know, Bill really seems like he knows what he's doing. And you can get sizzled hard. So you have to have, you know, some interpretive help out there to point you in the right directions of how do I allocate and what percentages, et cetera. And I'm seeing this really, Diane, being a problem amongst the younger folks, meaning that they've been, let's say you're 30 years old, you've seen nothing but the market go up like a rocket ship. You've seen things like I put, you know, $100 in Bitcoin and now it's worth, you know, many, 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 many multiples of that. And man, everything I touch turns to gold. So I'm the super investor.
Yeah.
And what goes up might come down. So I really hope there isn't a, you know, a 10-year generation of people that get fried.
And
when
who think
they realize that they're not as smart as they thought they were.
Right. And they actually they think it's kind of like a get rich quick schemes. You know, they don't know that solid investing consistently, small amounts or larger amounts over time, the consistency, it's kind of like a get rich quick, their mentality.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. And I think that's a big, big problem. Moving forward, we're going to have to come back to, you know, the basics. We're going to have to come back to, and I'm not trying to sound like, you know, oh, the older guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's go back to the basics. By basics, I mean analyzing fundamental data, understanding the intrinsic value of things, buying things for their value and not for their flash in the pan element. And when that happens, I hope that that's a soft rather than really hard landing for a lot of people. I hope that the reset button doesn't look like, you know, the 2008 financial crisis for whatever category they're in, because people are really betting the long-term virility of their retirement plan or their financial future on a lot of these flashes in the pan. So again, I hope that it's a soft lesson rather than a hard one.
To schedule an appointment to go through the Aptus Blueprint process with Josh, his phone number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And you can join Josh as he talks retirement with Bruce Hooley every Monday at 12:30 p.m. right here on 98.9 The Answer. You can find that recording at Josh's website, aptuswealth.com. More with Josh Pick when we come back.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, earlier in the show, we were talking about people's concerns about the surging housing market slowing down sometime. When it comes to investments as part of a retirement plan, in what ways are owning a home or multiple homes different from owning property?
Well, there's no question that rental real estate is a hot topic always. I mean, literally since the first day I got into this business, people were very interested in rental real estate. And that's been, I think, probably a theme for the last, 50 to 100 years. So that's nothing new. And there's some huge advantages to owning rental real estate, namely in the area of taxes and leverage. And in the realm of taxes, you get to write off a lot of stuff when you own rental real estate. You get to write off the interest on the mortgage, if you have one. You get to write off any other expenses and taxes that go along with owning that home. And you also get this magical level of tax benefit called depreciation. And depreciation essentially means that you get to write off a percentage of the value that you purchased that home for over a period of time, depending upon what kind of rental real estate it is, commercial versus residential. And you would say, well, I mean, the property value is going up. Why am I able to depreciate it? Well, because it is something that over time will need to have some renovations done to it. You'll need a new roof, et cetera. So the property is depreciating in value. It's really the dirt that it's on that is appreciating in value. So you don't get to write off the depreciation on the dirt, but you do on the property. So what that means is you could theoretically have a cash flow net positive property, meaning you're making money off of this property every month, net of all of your expenses, and the depreciation might be enough to make that money tax-free. So there's the tax benefits that are inherent, and obviously there's others that go along with it, but that's kind of the big ones. On top of that, you can buy a home for $200,000, and let's just say you do a normal loan where you put down 20%, it only costs you $40,000 to buy a $200,000 home, and the bank is willing to loan you the rest. So if you're cash flowing the equivalent of what that home costs to maintain, or maybe even cash flow positive, your percentage gain on your $40,000 investment is actually based upon $200,000. So that is called leverage. So if you think about it, I put $40,000 in, I never had to put another nickel into this property. It goes up by 5% a year. 5% on $200,000 is $10,000. $10,000 based upon a $40,000 investment is 25%. So you get that leverage that is associated with it. So there are some significant advantages to owning rental real estate. Now, obviously there's downsides that we can talk about as well, but the big ones would be, that tax favored investment. And then beyond that, there's this section of the tax code called 1031 exchanges, which is kind of like the game of Monopoly. Remember when you paid Monopoly, you got little houses, and then eventually you ended up working your way up to a hotel. Well, when you get into rental real estate, that's one of the options that you have. You keep on rolling from one to the next, to the next, to the next, and you get bigger and bigger properties, but you don't become responsible for that depreciation that you've been writing off all along the way. And then, at least according to current tax law, if you hold on to that in perpetuity until you pass away, your beneficiaries get something called a step-up in basis, which essentially wipes out all of those gains and tax liabilities that you've been kicking the can on, and they don't have to pay the taxes on them either. So huge tax shelter and a lot of leverage that is readily accessible via banks because banks want to loan money on houses because it's a secured asset.
How do you feel when your client says, Josh, I want to buy this house, but the rent will not cover the mortgage? Is it still real estate still a good enough investment if you have to supplement $100 or $200 a month with how appreciation's going?
I would change that from I am a real estate investor to I'm a real estate speculator. And the reason I would say that is because once you do that, you're banking on the fact that that real estate is going to go up in value significantly. If you're cash flowing on a property, you're winning from day one and you bought yourself a lot of flexibility. And even if that property doesn't grow at an amazing clip, you're still getting, call it a dividend, call it a stock dividend, right? If you're making 5% on your investment in the way of profitability on cash flow, that's a 5% dividend that you would receive on any other investment. And then if the property only goes up by, let's say, 3% a year, that's still an 8% net return. That's good. But if you're going underwater every single year, then that appreciation better be enough to justify in the long run. And now we're speculating on a real estate market. Now, clearly, there's plenty of examples that we can come up with, the Donald Trumps of the world, that have done very, very well with this type of approach. But to the average person, I would say tread lightly.
This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. To schedule your own planning session and to learn new strategies to manage risk, call Josh at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. Josh, owning property can definitely have its benefits, but there are also some drawbacks, like owning more property means more property taxes. Without getting into specific income levels or brackets, what are some important considerations specific to people that live in Ohio?
So every state has its tax, you know, pros and cons. And we're probably well aware of certain states like, you know, Texas, Florida, et cetera, that have no state income tax. But that doesn't mean that they don't have their own tax things to identify, like property taxes, et cetera. But specifically to Ohio, I think there's a couple things. One, I would say Central Ohio as a whole, and, you know, it is what it is. We certainly don't have low property taxes. So owning a home in Ohio, huge benefits in the way of great schools for the most part, but also pretty significant property taxes. We also have a combination of city, fed, and state taxes to combine with. And certain states don't have local taxes. They just have state taxes. But in Ohio, we're also pretty beneficial to small businesses, meaning that if you own a small business in Ohio, you are exempted from the first $250,000 of income from state income taxes, $250,000 worth of profit. After that, it's a flat 3%. So even though in Ohio, we have a graduated, you know, income tax system that can range, you know, all the way up to, let's just call it 5%-ish. If you own a business, that's beneficial in a way to bolster businesses. So I would say Ohio is, in general, pretty conducive to starting a small business. But other things that would apply to the individual. Every state has differences on how much you can contribute to 529s, for example. In the state of Ohio, you get to write off or deduct the first $4,000 per person to a 529 plan. There's a lot of things like that, Diane, that you have to look at specifically to your state. For example, in Michigan, if you just head up north, they have a different state deduction availability for their 529 plans. And I hate to say this because, you know, here in Ohio, we have to dislike Michigan because of their football team. But at the same time, they give a bigger and better deduction for 529 contributions. And there's you know, a host of things that go in line with that. Like in Ohio, we don't tax at the state level Social Security income. Other states do. I think the takeaway here is not only look at what it is in Ohio, but if you're thinking about moving to another state, hey, I'm going to retire and I'm going to move to Florida, or I'm going to move to Arizona, or I'm going to move to where I'm going, it might not be a level swap. Now, it might be to your benefit based upon your scenario, but it might be to your detriment. So do some research and make sure you are aware of the income tax provisions that apply in the state that you're going to, because they are significantly different across the board.
Josh's number is 614-364-7300. That is 614-364-7300. Thanks so much for joining us today. That is it for this show. We'll be back the same time next week.
You've been listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with host Josh Pick. Josh helps guide his clients through retirement by managing risk instead of chasing returns. He calls it a blueprint, and you can get started at no cost or obligation. Give the team at Aptus Wealth a call today to schedule your consultation at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300 or online at aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. To learn strategies to manage risk in the new economy, join us again next weekend right here at 98.9 The Answer. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.